Okay, we're going to begin here on the top of Yud Bet Amud Aleph. The Gemara here is continuing to discuss the Mishnah that we started with yesterday. The Mishnah was discussing about chametz, the difference in opinion between Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Meir in the inyan of chametz. Now, the Gemara then brought a Mishnah from Sanhedrin, and then based on that Mishnah in Sanhedrin, Abaye begins to explain the positions of Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Meir in Sanhedrin. So yesterday we saw two positions within Rabbi Meir, but basically that are the same. One is that Rabbi Meir believes either a person only makes a very slight mistake in terms of the hours or makes no mistake at all. And according to Rabbi Huda, either you make a half an hour mistake or you make an hour mistake. And that's a limited amount of time that we assume that the two Edim make a mistake. And therefore, in the case of the testimony between one of them said 3 hours and one of them said 5 hours, our assumption in the position of Rabbi Huda, according to Abaye, was that that meant the end of the third hour by that one witness and the beginning of the fifth hour for the other witness, and they're just a little over an hour apart from each other. That's Abaye's understanding of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Huda's position in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. So now on the top of Yud Bet Amud Aleph, Azal Rav Huna, Breid Rabbi Huda, Amra the Shmaitita Kamei de Ravo. So he brought over these statements of Abaye or these explanations of Abaye to Rava. So Amar now is Rava responding to Rav Huna's bringing of the memory of Abaye to Rava. Uma elu daikininan bahane sade. If we really look into these witnesses over here, the haidekamar shalosh bitchilat shalosh. Maybe when he said three, he meant the beginning of the third hour. And the one who said the fifth hour, Besov Chamesh, meant the end of the fifth hour. Behavia Edut Mucheshet. In that case, the Edim are not consistent. We cannot reconcile between their two testimonies because, according to Abaye, only if you're within an hour of each other can you be reconciled. But the possibility of explaining the three and fifth hour, the third and the fifth hour, is that one meant the beginning of the third hour, one meant the end of the fifth hour, means they're 2 hours apart. And therefore, we would say that their edut is not acceptable. And therefore, we wouldn't kill them. And you, Abaye, are suggesting, based on that safek, that we're willing to kill Rachman Amar. Right? The Torah says, Hashem says, that the shuftim, when they adjudicate a case, there is an obligation to be tzilu et ha'ida, to be down the kaf schut, or really to be lomade schut on behalf of the party that is being tried, so they doesn't end up in the death penalty. So in this situation, if we really believe that, for instance, Rabbi Huda thinks that you can only have an hour differential between the two Edim in order for them to be considered a single testimony and a kosher testimony, and then they come in, the Edim, and one says three and one says five, then to the benefit of the person on trial, we should say that one eid means the beginning of the third hour, one means the end of the fifth hour. They're 2 hours apart. Their eidut is not valuable over here. So why would you, Abaye, then suggest, no, let's say that it meant the end of the third hour and beginning of the fifth hour. Why are we reading into their words something that is to the detriment of the person that's on trial? So Elam Rava. Rava says, if you're going to explain their positions, this is how you have to explain the positions of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. So as opposed to Abaye, who minimized the mistake that people make. So he said when we're talking about an hour difference, it really meant a mashahu or not at all. And when it was looked like a 2 hour difference, he says, no, it's really an hour difference or a half an hour difference. So he minimized the difference in the Edim. Here Rav was going to look to maximize the difference with the Edim. And with that maximized difference, we must say that the Edut is still kasher. Otherwise, we wouldn't let the testimony go through. And therefore, the Divrei Rabbi Meir, Adam Tuesh Deshaot, Chaser Mashu. According to Rabbi Meir, a person is apt to make a mistake of 2 hours minus a little bit. But Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rabbi Yehuda, Adam Tuesh, Shalosh Shaot, Chaser Mashu. People are make mistakes up to 3 hours minus a little bit. How does that work? So here's the explanation. The Divrei Rabbi Meir, Adam Tuesh, Shalosh Shaot, Chaser Mashu. According to Rabbi Meir, a person makes a little less than a 2 hour mistake. The crime, the incident took place either at the beginning of the second hour or the end of the third hour. And one of the two witnesses here is mistaken by Bechot Machaser Masho, by a little less than 2 hours. So therefore, we have one witness come in and say it's two, and one witness say that it was in the third hour. So now say, for instance, the incident of the crime took place in the second hour. So one of the witnesses is on the money. he got the hour right. He said it was the beginning of the second hour, and that's when it took place. The second witness who says it's in the third hour meant the end of the third hour, and he was 2 hours off, just under 2 hours off when it really happened. And yet, Rabbi Meir says that that edut is considered to be a consistent edut, an okay edut, because that's a margin of error that is expected or something that is normal. And so because of that, we consider the edut to be one. Rabbi Huda, Adam Toe Shalosh Od Chaser Mashu. On the other hand, according to Rabbi Huda, the margin of error that we're willing to accept is a little less than 3 hours. Masa Ki Hava Obitzchilet Shalosh Obisov Chamesh. The incident, the crime, took place either in the beginning of the third hour or the end of the fifth hour. V'chad Ma'anayu Katai. And only one of them is mistaken. One of them is on the money. And the other one makes a mistake, Shalosh Od Chaser Mashu, by a little under 3 hours. So again, for instance, say the crime or the incident took place at the beginning of the third hour. One witness comes in and says, third hour. You know what he means? He means the beginning of the third hour, he's on the money. The other witness comes in and says, fifth hour. He means the end of the fifth hour. So now, the incident took place at the beginning of the third hour. So you have the remainder of the third hour, the whole fourth hour, and the whole fifth hour. So you have just under 3 hours worth of difference between when the crime took place and when this witness is coming in and testifying that it happened. And yet, Rabbi Yehuda says that's a reasonable margin of error, and we're willing to accept their edut as being one. So according to Rava, Rabbi Meir allows for a margin of error, a mistake of up to 2 hours minus a little bit, and Rabbi Yehuda allows for a mistake of 3 hours minus a little bit. One of the things about Rabbi Shita that's important here is that he says that only one of the witnesses makes a mistake. As opposed to the way Abai explained it, Abai explained it that both witnesses possibly could be mistaken, and then the incident could have taken place between them, or in a time period that's between them, but they both could have been mistaken. Rabbi's assumption in Tosafot suggests that here, that Rava must believe that one of the witnesses is going to hit it on the money. We only assume that one witness is off over here. And therefore, the maximum difference that you could have is 2 hours or 3 hours. Because if we thought both witnesses could be off, for instance, if one of the witnesses came in and said 3, and one of the witnesses came in and said 5, Rabbi Meir says that's pasul. It doesn't work. Yet, if you believed that they both could be mistaken, there's a possibility that the incident took place at the fourth hour. And if that's the case, the person who came and said 3 meant the beginning of the third hour. The person who came and said 5 said the end of the 5 hour. They're both less than 2 hours away from the incident, and therefore they should be fine. The answer is that Rava doesn't allow for that. Rava doesn't allow for both of them to be mistaken. We assume that one of them is right and one of them is mistaken, and the one is mistaken has that margin of error in it. For Rabbi Meir, that margin of error is a little under 2 hours, and for Rabbi Yehuda, that margin of error is a little under 3 hours. Right now we're going to move on to a piece of Gemara or Mishnah from Sanhedrin that explains about how we go about vetting the witnesses when they come in. And how do we test whether they are telling the truth? How do we know what to ask them or how to direct the questioning in order to understand what's happening here? So the Mishnah there says that there are both Chakirot and Bigdikot. Chakirot and Bdikot. Chakirot are actually set questions. We're going to see in a second there are 7 of these set questions that must be asked of the witnesses, and the witness must answer. If they answer in any one of those 7 that they don't know, they're out. Their testimony is not accepted. Those 7 questions are mandatory and mandatory to be answered. In addition to that, we have additional questions called Bdikot. Bdikot are what the judges determine is valuable or more information they can ask about the crime or the crime scene, location, and those the witnesses can't answer, I don't know, because they're not necessarily essential to the testimony or to allowing the testimony to go through, but it helps the judges to determine whether they are speaking the truth or not. So that's what's not. Hayu bodkim otan b'sheva chakirot. They used to check the witnesses with these 7 chakirot. These 7 chakirot are learned out of the psukim in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara explains how we get to these 7 based on it's a Gzeira Shava plus what it says in the Pasuk of a Darashta, Heitev. You have to check well. So each one of those descriptions of what you have to do through a Gzeira Shava, we add them up and we end up with 7. Here are the 7 questions. Be'ezo Shavua. In which Shemitah are we in the cycle of the Yovel? The Yovel has 7 Shemitah cycles in it. Which one of the Shemitah cycles did this crime take place in? Today, that would not be relevant necessarily because we don't have a Yovel cycle anymore, so you can't say that. Be'ezo Shana, in which year? Which year means in which year of the Shemitah cycle did the crime take place? So now, Be'ezo Shana, like for instance now, we're found in the fifth year of the Shemitah cycle. So you would have to say it was in the fifth year of the Shemitah cycle. Be'ez chodesh, in which month of the year did it take place? Pikama b'chodesh, what's the date in the month on which it took place? Be'ez yom, on what day of the week did it take place? Be'ez sha'ah, at what hour of the day did it take place? Be'ez makom, and where was the location of the crime? Basically, these seven questions establish the time and location of the crime. And that's the information that we're searching for from the Edim. Now, as Rashi points out, that at least one of these is unnecessary, because you could learn that information from the answer to another one of the questions. But the fact that we demand them to answer all seven of them is because here we have a Gzeirat HaKetuv. And since there's a Gzeirat HaKetuv about this information, we make you answer the questions despite the fact that some of this information is somewhat redundant. So Rashi says that the possibility of the hour may not have been necessary. And that is because, what is the reason that we need all this information and this type of detailed information? And that is because the Pasuk says, V'tashua shuftim hetev, v'nei heide sheker haid, v'asitim lo kasher zamam lasot. So therefore the Gemara says, or we learn out from that, edut, sh'ata yechod lekayem b'atrat hazama have edut. Only if you can create a hazama, which we'll explain in 1 second, of this edut, is the edut considered to be kasher. So now, why we need this information from the edim with regards to the time and location is very understandable. We need the time and location information because if other witnesses want to come and disagree, then they have to know the information that these witnesses are putting forth, and they can come and disagree with it. So having this information is important, number one, for what we call tachasha, other edim who want to come and disagree, testify to the alternative about what took place. But there's also an additional thing called hazama. Hazama is a gzerat hakatuv, something that the Torah says, which is that if another set of edim comes and says about the first set of edim who are testifying about the crime, imanu ha'item, you are with us when you are testifying that the crime took place. The Torah says that the second set of witnesses, the witnesses who come in and say you were with us, they are automatically believed. I mean, assuming that we put them through of the proper interrogation. If we accept their testimony, then the first witnesses are put to death if it was a capital case, or they get the punishment of whoever they were testifying against in other cases. It's all part of the Gemara and Makot, about exactly how this works with Edim Zomimim or Hazama. So this Hazama, in order to happen, the witnesses have to come along and testify that Imanoitim, you were with us. The only way they can say you were with us at that time is if we have all the information from the first set of Edim as to when they think the crime took place. All that information. Now Rashi points out that technically we didn't need the hour of the day, because the witnesses could come along and say, you were with us all day. So if you were with us all day, there's no way that you can testify. It doesn't matter what the hour is. There's no way you could testify on that day that you were a witness to the crime. And therefore, we have an edut shiachol azima. And since that's an edut shiachol azima, it's a kasher edut. Rashi says, despite that fact, you still need to have the exact hour. If you don't give the hour, the edut is b'teila, because this is a gzeirat hakatuv. Gzeirat hakatuv is, you must answer these seven questions in order to have this information available. Now, Tosafot does ask and says, why is the day of the week important? The day of the week should be an outcome or an outgrowth of the fact that they told us the date of the month. If you know what the date of the month is, then we also should know what the day of the week is. Why did we make them tell us both the date of the month as well as the day of the week? So Rashi and Sanhedrin, Rashi not here, but Rashi and Sanhedrin says the reason we need that information is because other Edim are coming. If you give them more information, the more information you give them, the more likely they are to come to contradict, argue, disagree with the first set of Edim, or to be amazing them. So if you give them the day of the week, that might trigger in their memory something about that, and then they'll come and testify. So we give more information we give them, the better equipped other Edim are to come to undermine the first set of Edim. And therefore, we demand the extra information, even though technically it's not necessary. Tosafot over here gives two other possible answers. One of them is similar to what we just said in Rashi, that it's a Gzeirat HaKetuv. Gzeirat HaKetuv is that you must answer all seven questions, and that's it. Doesn't matter if there's a certain amount of redundancy in the questions. We demand that you answer the questions. The other possibility, Tosafot says, is because Maybe one of the witnesses said it was the second of the month, and the other witness said it was the third of the month. So we said before, we could explain that difference based on the fact that one of them knew about the Ibra Chodesh and one of them did not know about the Ibra Chodesh. How do we know? We asked them what the day of the week is. If they give us the same day of the week, but a different date, then we have evidence to the fact, or circumstantial evidence to the fact, that they really did make a mistake about the previous month, because they're giving us the same day with a different date on it. And that's a good piece of evidence to the fact that they've made a mistake about the dating based on the Ibra Chodesh. So those are different answers as to why we need all of this information, Gzeira Takatuf, or it helps us to bring in other Edim or to trigger the memory of other Edim, or because it helps us with assessing all the information that's being provided us by these Edim. But the basic idea here is that these Edim must provide us with this information of timing and location. Vitnan, we have an additional Mishnah in Sanhedrin. Ma ben chakirot lebedikot. What's the difference between a chakira and a bdika? So when it says chakirot, amar ched mehen eni odeya, in these seven questions of the chakirot, one of them says, I don't know the answer. Idutam tela. That's it. We dismiss their testimony. It's over. Bdikot, afilu shneem umrim enin an yodim. Even if both of them say we don't know the answer to that question, idutan kayemet. For instance, what was the murderer wearing at the crime? Was it white? Was it black? So now that information is useful. It's helpful. But it's not absolutely necessary for their edut to be accepted. So over here, for white and black, for instance, that information would help us in assessing whether both edim are telling the same thing or talking about the same crime or establishing that they're both talking about the same crime. But nevertheless, if they just say, I don't know, that doesn't detract from the fact that they witnessed the crime and that their edut is still a viable edut. V'avinamba, maishna chakirot, Uma shna bedikot. So I'm reading it. Chakirot amar echad mehem eni odeya edutam b'teila. Dehavila edut she'i ata yachol hazima. So what is that? Because when it comes to chakirot, why, if we say eni odeya, does the whole edut get dismissed? Why does the whole testimony get dismissed? It's because then you have a failure in a core part of what edut must be. And that is that edut she'ata yachol hazima. The edim have to have the ability to set themselves up in a position where someone else can come along and deny that they were witnesses to that event. The only way they can do that is if they give the exact dating, timing, and location, and then other witnesses can deny that they were there or they were present. So that's the idea of Edut She'ata Yachol Hazima. Again, the reason they have to give time and location is for two reasons. Reason you would believe that Edut, that you cannot be Mezim, is not good Edut. One is because the information is valuable. Vesham is valuable both from the perspective of contradicting their testimony, as well as having other witnesses come along and tell us that they weren't at the scene of the crime. As well as the second reason to have that is that then the witnesses who come and lie have something to fear, because they know that someone else could actually figure out that they weren't there. If they were give a testimony where you can never even mezim it, they really have no fear of other witnesses coming along and saying that they weren't at the crime scene because they didn't give enough information for anybody to say that about them. So we want the witnesses, number one, to tell the truth. And if they're lying, to be fearful of lying because someone else can come and catch them in that lie. And number two is we want them to give us enough information so that others that were present or others that know can now contradict, deny, or corroborate that which the witnesses are saying. On the other hand, bidikot, the extra information that we're looking for, edut she'ata yachol hazimahi. It's an edut that has the possibility of being it reaching the point of hazama, and therefore it's a kosher edut. So that's why the edut continues to go through, even if they answer any yodea. So now, viamart. So this is the question. Why do we bring this all down? If you want to suggest, tai inish kulei hai, that people have this margin of error in terms of the hours, chakirot de ezu sha'a nami edut she'ata yachol hazimahi. Now you run into a problem because the edut about the hours is something that you can't have other witnesses come along and say, imanu ha'itim. De amre, because the witnesses could just answer all the time, mitei katayinan. We made a mistake. We made a mistake about the timing. That's what the problem or the question that is being raised here is. If one of the core principles of edut, or the believability, or the acceptance of testimony of witnesses, is the fact that they set themselves up in a position where other witnesses come along and say, Imanoitim, you were with us. Now, if we say that there's a margin in error of hours, so they don't have that sphere anymore. They can go along and say, it happened in the third hour. Witnesses come along and say, hey, you know, you were with us during the third hour. You know, you're right. It was really the fifth hour. I made a mistake. So now they have a way to get out of this problem every time. And so we've lost this aspect of fear of lying because they can't get really caught. And number two is for other witnesses to come along and to contradict, deny what they're saying, it's going to be harder as well because there's a margin of error in their statements. And the other witnesses can come along and say something and we say, well, no, it's really not that case. This was in the margin of error and they're not really contradicting each other. So therefore, we have a problem now in Eidut. How do we get to a position we have kosher Eidut if we allow for this margin of error in the telling of time? So the answer to the Gemara is, Diavina and Lehu Kulei Ta'utayu. So we give the witnesses who come along and say, Imanu Aitim, the Eidim who come to Mezim, the first set of Eidim, they say, you were with us from the entire period of the margin of error. And that'll solve the problem. Because by saying that, now they basically covered the entire span where they can't say anymore, oh, well, I made a mistake. Moses said, well, throughout that whole period of the mistake, you were with us. And therefore, there's no question anymore. Imanoitim, and it is Eidut Sheta Yechola Zima. So, Li Rabbi Meir. So let's explain this. According to Rabbi Meir, Yavin Le Mitzchilat Sha'ar Rishona Ad Sof Chamesh. Therefore, according to Rabbi Meir, you give them from the beginning of the first hour until the end of the fifth hour. Ubedinu the native lo mikaretzvei, and the truth is we would have gone before the first hour as well. Ela ben yomo madalelia lo tao inche, but people don't make such a big error when it comes to certain thresholds. This is what we discussed yesterday, that there's certain demarcations during the day where we have no question that people don't make a mistake. Sunrise, before sunrise and post sunrise, people don't make a mistake. Sunset, the same thing. Prior to sunset, after sunset, people don't make a mistake about that. Noon, also people don't make a mistake. Before noon and afternoon, people don't make a mistake, again, because the shadow casts in different directions. So those are points in along the time sequence of the day where we know people don't make mistakes. The mistakes they make are between sunrise and noon, and between noon and sunset. So therefore, according to Rabbi Meir, we said before that Rabbi Meir thinks that you can make up to a two-hour mistake in terms of timing. So here we had the testimony of these two individuals. They come along and they say, one of them says it happened in the second hour, and the other one says it happened in the third hour. According to Rabbi Meir, Lefi Rava, that means that one of them is saying it happened at the beginning of the second hour, and the other one says it's happening at the end of the third hour. And we know, according to Rabbi Meir, you have a window of error or margin of error of just under 2 hours. So if I start at the beginning of the second hour, that means from there, I could have meant beginning of second hour, beginning of third hour, and then end of third hour, which is a little under 2 hours. And then in the other direction, from the beginning of the second hour, that means beginning of the first hour, beginning of 0 hour, or the hour before sunrise. So I could have gone back and said the margin of error extends to before the sunrise. But we cut it off at sunrise, and that's what he says, the beginning of the first hour, because nobody makes a mistake that far back. And same with the person who has the third hour. The person who testifies about the third hour is saying it's the end of the third hour. So if I go 2 hours earlier, or a little under 2 hours earlier, it means end of second, and then beginning of second. So that's a reasonable margin of error. And then the other way to the other direction. If it's the end of the third hour, you can make a 2 hour mistake in the other direction, which means end of third hour, end of fourth hour, and then into the fifth hour, just into the middle or towards the end of the hour. So that's what he just said over here. We said, according to Rabbi Meir, the witnesses can come and testify mitchila sharishona from sunrise at sof chamesh until the end of the fifth hour. So by saying that, they've covered the whole margin of error for these two witnesses that testified about the second and third hour. So now we have an eidut sheyachol hazima. You can have eidim zomim come. If they say you're with us for that 5 hour span, then we know that they are lying, or we know that they are now eidim zomimim. Okay, Ula Rabbi Yehuda. According to Rabbi Yehuda in Rava Shita, where you can have up to a 3 hour mistake, you give them from the beginning of sunrise until the end of the sixth hour. Again, he says if a person testifies at the third hour and the fifth hour. Third hour, according to Rabbi, means the beginning of the third hour. Fifth hour means the end of the fifth hour. And you have up to a little under 3 hour mistake. So if he's testifying at the beginning of the third hour and there's more than 3 hours, he's going before sunrise. And for the one in the fifth hour, if he's going 3 hours after that, then he's passing through noon. So, ubedinu denetivu mikaretzvei. The truth is that they really should have to testify about more hours prior to that point. Then the Shar Rishonah, then Yom Madalela and Lotoyinche. People don't make a mistake between before sunrise and after sunrise. And we should also give more hours in terms of the margin of error after noon. Ella should behe chama b'mizrach, b'zayna chama b'marav. The fifth hour, the sun is on the eastern side, and on the seventh hour, the sun's on the western side, so people don't make a mistake when you cross over noon. So because of that, all these edim have to come along and say is, you were with us from the beginning, from sunrise until noon, and then that's hazama, because these edim now can't claim that they made a mistake, and it's outside their realm. Now, we have to differentiate here between the ability to keep the testimony alive and viable, and hazama. Now, all of these mistakes, and that's what Rashi points out over here, the chokanach ta'uto di'avinan luhu, hani mili letzulinhu ulemifterinu mikatla. All these excuses that we give them, or outs that we give them, that's to save them from the death penalty. So over here, if they come along, and the Edim come along, and he said, you were with us during the third hour. So one of the Edim who said third hour before said, you know what, I really made a mistake. I didn't mean third hour, I meant before, and you guys are off by a little bit. And then the other one was in the fifth hour. Before we said, well, now there's one testimony between the third and the fifth hour. That's because they're within a period of time, like Rabbi Yehuda says, within 3 hours of each other, or a little less than 3 hours of each other. But if they already start giving these excuses to try to get or slip out of the problem of the Edim Zomamim, by doing that, they undermine the ability to join their testimony together. Because if they say, oh, I didn't really mean the third hour, I meant the first hour, and you're saying the fourth hour, so we're nowhere near each other. But by doing that, by saying he's in the first hour, he can no longer reconcile with the other witness that's saying the fifth hour. And that's what Rashi points out here. When we're allowing them this out to say that there is margin of error, and therefore they can get out of the problem, that margin of error saves them from the death penalty of Vasitim Lo Kasher Zamam Lasot. Aval, Mikom Okom, Misha'a Shehu Zam Echad Mehem, Be'oto Sha'a Levada. As long as one of the witnesses is then, has a Hazama about them, Ubshchela Chereha Miyad B'teila Ha'idut. Then the Idut's over. Because as soon as you're forcing him to move away from his stated position, he's going to end up with a gap that's bigger than the margin of error that we're willing to accept between him and the other witness. And because of that, the testimony will fall apart. So you have to divide here between the ability to maintain the testimony and whether these edim are going to be brought to trial because they're edim zomamim. So the standard for edim zomamim is a much higher standard. Since it's a higher standard of proof over there, we can give them the excuses of margin of error and say they're not going to get the death penalty because they can say, oh, you made a mistake. Where's the difference between us and these hours? But as far as the ability for them to maintain their testimony and have their testimony then be used against the original person that they claim committed the crime, we're not going to uphold their testimony anymore because they're now shifted their testimony to a point where we can no longer keep the two edim within a normal margin of error. So that's an important distinction to keep in mind here when we're talking about the ability of people to say, oh, we had this margin of error. Yes, they can use that excuse, but by using that excuse, they also undermine their testimony. Tosafot does ask over here, why are we so certain that the edim will come along and say, Imanu Aitem, have the right time? We keep assuming that the original Edim are the ones who made the error with regards to the timing, and the new Edim who show up are the ones who have it all correct. Why don't we just say that the new Edim who came, they're the ones who have made the mistake? The answer is something that we discussed before, which is that Rava believes that only one of the two Edim make a mistake. We never assume that both Edim made a mistake as to regards to when the timing is. So in the first testimony, we already have a difference in opinion between the Edim. So we know that one of those Edim is clearly incorrect in their timing. When the Edim who come to be Mezim, that first set of Edim come, they both give the same time. And since they both give the same time, if we were to move their Edut or say that their Edut was wrong, we would be implying that both Edim got the timing wrong. And according to Rava, as we mentioned before, we don't say that. We don't say that both of the Edim got it wrong. It's true also in the second Lashon of Abaye, in the Ikedame Abaye, the difference between the first Lashon of Abaye and the second Lashon of Abaye is that exactly that point. In the first Lashon of Abaye, we assume that both Edim could make a mistake, and the actual event took place somewhere between them. In the second Lashon of Abaye, it's only one of the two Edim that made a mistake. Just like in Rava's opinion, only one of the two Edim can make a mistake. And therefore, if both Edim come and testify to the same time period, we're not going to say that they made a mistake because of that fact that they're both testifying. If we say they make a mistake, we're saying two Edim made a mistake, and we do not say that. All right, it's none. Now we come to our Mishnah. And our Mishnah provides a little bit of a problem, because our Mishnah versus the Mishnah in Sanhedrin both have the opinions of Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Meir, but they seem to be talking about different margins of error. And so the question is, why are the margins of error in Sanhedrin this way, and the margins of error that we have here in our Gemara and Pesachim a different way? Why are they different? And that's the question the Gemara is posing right now. It's not. Rabbi Meir, Meir Ochlin Kol Hei B'Sofrim Mitzchilat Vav, Our Mishnah exactly, that Rabbi Meir says you can eat for the entire fifth hour, the sixth hour you burn it, and then also the Isur Deraita kicks in the beginning of the seventh hour. Yehuda says that you eat the entire fourth hour. Tolin means that you can't eat it, but it's not Asur Bahana. You can get benefit from it. You can do whatever you need to do with it during that fifth hour. Sofim, it's glad chase, and then the sixth hour you burn it. Le'abaye, of Liba de Rabbi Meir. Let's go back to Abaye's explanation of Rabbi Meir in Sanhedrin. Damar in Adam Tue velo klum. People don't make any mistakes at all. Necho kulashit. Why don't you eat for the entire sixth hour? Because people don't make a mistake. What are we afraid of letting people eat all the way till the beginning of the seventh hour, all the way till noon? People don't make mistakes about time, according to that Shita and Rabbi Meir. So over here, why are we creating any buffer in terms of chametz? Or even according to the Ikad Amri in Abayi, you say that people make a mistake, a small or fractional mistake. At least eat until the end of the sixth hour, because people make a slight mistake, a slight error. So give them all the way till the end of the sixth hour, and that'll cover that small amount of error. And Abayi's position, Rabbi Yehuda, Damar Adam Tue Chatzisha, that the maximum mistake that a person makes is half an hour. You should go at least through the halfway through the sixth hour, because you're only going to make a mistake of half an hour. And if Tchilat Sheva is the problem, then why should I make any buffer more than a half an hour? According to the second lesson in Abayi, which is the Ikad Amri, the Rabbi Yehuda believes you can make up to a little more than an hour mistake. Nechalat Sof, hey, why do you have to stop at the beginning of the fifth hour? You should be able to go all the way to the end of the fifth hour. Amar Abaye. Abaye gives an answer. Edut Misura Bezizim. Chametz Tachol Masur. All right, let's start with Chametz Tachol Masur. Chametz is something that everybody needs to deal with. The general populace has to deal with it. When you're dealing with, and when you are talking about the general populace, you can't rely on people having this great time-telling ability. Now, time-telling ability, we know there are margins of error, but a margin of error is within a normal distribution curve. And that means that there are going to be people at both sides of that distribution curve, people that are even better than normal and people that are worse than normal. And we can't risk that problem. So therefore, in Chametz, despite the fact that by testimony, by witnesses, we think the margin of error is much smaller, by Chametz, we widen the buffer to capture the general populace and make sure that nobody makes a mistake. So therefore, the time frames or the buffers that we create here are much greater than they are by Edut. On the other hand, Edut is relegated to the Zrizim. Now, what does that mean, relegated to the Zrizim? Whoever's a witness comes and testifies. Why does that mean it's relegated to the Zrizim? So as Rashi explains it here, Zrizim means Ein adam bala'id ala nefesh alimkin baki b'sha'ot. A person's not going to come and testify unless he really knows time and he can answer the question. He knows when he comes to Beit Din to testify, the questions they're going to ask him are the Sheva Chakirot. There's no secret, the Sheva Chakirot, that they're going to ask him. And he knows they're going to ask him when was the time of the crime. And if he doesn't know or he can't tell time well, he's just not going to come and testify because he knows he can't answer that question. And so the people who do come to testify are people who do think they know or are able to tell the time. And so because of that, we have a self-selection process, which brings the people that are giving edut are people who do have that ability to tell time, and therefore they have this much smaller margin of error. So that's the difference between edut. Edut is relegated to people who can discern time, and therefore the buffer is much, or the margin of error is much smaller. Chametz is granted the general populace. Everybody has to deal with it, and therefore we expanded the buffer. And that will explain the difference between Rav Meir and Rabbi Yehuda's position here in Pesachim versus their position in Sanhedrin. V'Ravo, what about Ravo? Ravo, libid Rabbi Meir, dadam toet, shtei sha'ot chaser mashu, according to Ravo, who says that according to Rabbi Meir, the margin of error in telling time is a little under 2 hours, mitchilat heilo nechol. How can Rabbi Meir let you eat all the way to the beginning of the sixth hour? He should stop you at the beginning of the fifth hour. So my answer is very simply, hey, chama b'mizrach, v'zayin chama b'maraf. That when it comes to chametz, the threshold is the noontime period. We know that if you're in the fifth hour, you're in the east, the sun. You're in the seventh hour, you're in the west. So that is a time period where everybody can discern. That's one of those thresholds we said during the day where everybody knows that you've crossed over that threshold. So Gemara says, okay, yahachi, b'shit naminecho. If everybody knows when noon is, then why do you have to create any buffer at all? Just say, at noon you gotta stop. That's it. Why do we have the buffer of saying an hour before you gotta stop and have this Isur d'Rabbanan? Because you can answer the same way you did before, which is, everybody knows when noon is. Amar Rav Adar Bar Abba, shit Yoma Bikanoto Kai. At noontime, the sun, the word here, Karen or Kanata, means corner. I'll explain that in 1 second, but the meaning really is that it's in the zenith or the peak. The sun at the peak or the time of noon is indiscernible in terms of where it is in that 6 hour period. That means from, you know, roughly 11:30 to 12:30 time period, it's hard to discern when exactly noon is, when it's exactly in the middle of the sky. If you're towards the beginning of the sixth hour, the end of the fifth hour, by then already, it's clear that you're on the eastern side. If you move to the end of the seventh hour, the beginning of the eighth hour already, then we're clear that it's in the west. In that period where it's in the center, that area is not so clear. So we know that we can't get to the exact noon. We have a certain amount of margin of error around noon itself. When you pass that margin of error, then it's clear that you're on a crossed over a threshold and people don't make a mistake. But the noontime period itself has some sort of fuzziness to that area, because when the sun's in the peak of the sky, you can't tell exactly center, a little off to the right, a little off to the left. That's too hard to determine. And therefore, there is a margin of error in there. Because of that margin of error, we say, take it back a little bit, give a buffer of an hour of the sixth hour in order to prevent people coming into that problem of Tchilat Sheva when exactly noon is. So that's Rava's explanation within Rabbi Meir. Now, why the Gemara uses here the term Karnata has to do with something that we've spoken about in the past, about how they thought that the sun moved through the sky. The sun moves through the sky. It rises on the eastern side, and then it traverses the sky. I mean, this is as if, of course, we're moving around the sun, but the sun moves through the sky and then sets on the western side. Happens to be in the summer months that the sun spends more time in the sky. And then in the winter months, the sun spends less time in the sky. The explanation given by the Rishonim for that is because it depends how much of the directions of the world did the sun cover. And that is, when the sun rises, for us in the northern hemisphere, the sun is always to our south. So the sun is always on the southern side. And that's why when you have southern-facing homes, they're facing the sun. They get the most sunlight, they're always facing the sun. Because we're in the northern hemisphere, the sun is always to our south. The question is, along the eastern side of the world, or along the western side, whichever one you want to pick, when the sun rises, it could rise all the way to the north side, or it could rise all the way to the southern side of that. So in the wintertime, it rises toward the southeastern side. In the summertime, it rises towards the northeastern side. But the sun during this day still has to reach over to the southern side, because it travels along the southern side and then comes back and sets on the western side. And then in the summertime, again, it'll set in the northwestern corner. So the way the Rishonim, and Rashi describes this in other places in Chaz, describe the sun moving during the day is, so for instance, in a summer day now, we just went through the summer solstice. In the summer solstice, the sun will rise the furthest north along the eastern side. It will then, according to the Rishonim, cover the whole eastern side, travels along the whole east, then travels the southern side, and then comes back on the western side all the way to the north of the western side. And that's why there's so much sunlight during those days, because it has to travel the entire east, the entire south, and the entire west in a almost like a angled manner, not in a smooth fashion of a circular fashion. In the winter, it'll be just the opposite. The sun will rise on the southeastern corner, travel along the south, so it doesn't have to go very far along the eastern side, and then set on the southwestern side. So therefore, it's less sunlight because all it does is travel the southern side. So that's the way the Rishonim explain it. So what they call karnata are the points, the turning points along the sides of the world. So if it moves along the eastern side to the south and then over to the western side, karnata are those points where it changes direction. So that's why the use of the word karnata here is bekarnata kai, that at noontime, it's at that pivotal point in the south where it's changing from the eastern side that it traveled towards the south, now from the southern side towards the western side. So that's why they use the term karnata. Just a little background as to why the Gemara is using the term karnata. It's not as it's so important to the actual understanding here, but just so you understand why they're using that term. So now the Gemara says, "V'Rava libid Rabbi Yehuda." Rava, according to Rabbi Yehuda, "Damar Adam Toeg Gimel Shot Chaser Mashu," that a person, a margin of error that's normal is a little under 3 hours. Mitchila Dalid Onechol. Why does Rabbi Yehuda only back up the Iser Achila back to the beginning of the fifth hour? He should back it up all the way to the beginning of the fourth hour. Gemara says, "Hey Chama B'Mizrach, Sheva Chama B'Marav." Person's not going to make that type of mistake because beginning of the seventh hour, the sun's changing the sides of the sky, and therefore people don't make a mistake. The Choshe came Dalit. And certainly the fourth hour, nobody's going to make a mistake between the fourth hour and the seventh hour. It says, Yehochi, well, if you're using that logic, why don't you just say, Behei Naminechol, let us eat for the whole fifth hour as well? because people don't make a mistake between the fifth hour and the seventh hour. That's exactly the statement that we just made. The Targum Abaye Libid Rava. Abaye answers on behalf of Rava. Edut Mesorah Lezuzim. Chametz Tachol Masur. He answers what he answered for his own self, that he answers now for Rava, which is that there's a difference in who's involved in Chametz and who's involved in Edut. Edut is relegated to people who have more expertise in telling time, whereas Chametz is for the general populace, and therefore we have to create a greater buffer. V'Rava Amar, Rava himself says, Lav hainu tainu de Rabbi Yehuda. You don't understand why Rabbi Yehuda requires it this way. Ela Rabbi Yehuda l'tamei. Rabbi Yehuda is the shitato, which we'll get to later on in the Masechta. Damar ein biur chametz el esreifa. Rabbi Yehuda believes that the only way to eliminate chametz is through burning it. V'ayivu le rabbonon sha'achat l'kod ba'itzim. So the rabbonon wanted to create a buffer in which to give you the time to properly collect the wood or the firewood to burn the chametz. If we allowed you to keep eating all the way to the end, then all of a sudden you'd be at the point of the zman isur, and you wouldn't have taken a break to go get the wood or to be a souk in the preparations for Bir Chametz. So what the Chachamim did was they stopped their point at the fifth hour, and they said you can eat until the fifth hour. Stop eating at the fifth hour until the sixth hour so that you can go and prepare to burn the Chametz and do Bir Chametz. Collect the wood, get the kindling and the firewood, whatever you need to burn the Chametz. So the purpose here is to help out Rabbi Yehuda the Shitate, which is that Bir Chametz. So therefore he says they created a buffer to allow people to do Bir Chametz in the proper manner. Eitvei Ravina the Rav, Ravina asked Rabba, Amar Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda qualifies his statement. Eimatai, when is this true? Shelo b'shat b'yuro? Not at the time of b'yur. Aval b'shat b'yuro, ashbatatol b'chol davar. At the time of b'yur, then you can do ashbata, you can do the elimination with anything you want. So now, this is Machloket Rashi and Tosafot, exactly what it means, shat b'yuro and shelo b'shat b'yuro. Rashi claims, shelo b'shat b'yuro means at the beginning of the sixth hour. That's not the time of Biur. So that's Amar Yehuda Emetai Shelo B'Shat Biuro. When you're not yet at the Isur de Oraita, then we tell you to do Biur through Sreifa. Aval B'Shat Biuro, once you hit the seventh hour and you hit an Isur de Oraita, Hashbatato B'Chol Davar, we tell you to eliminate it any way you can. The faster, the better. It doesn't matter Biur, it doesn't matter. Our objective here is to get rid of the problem of Bayre Bayimatse. You're in violation of an Isur de Oraita. So when you're in violation of Isur de Oraita, I'm not going to hold up the problem to get the firewood and to burn it. I just say get rid of it any way possible. Before that time, you have to burn it. So what the suggestion of Ravina is to Rabba is, okay, say the guy doesn't have firewood. All he has to do is wait until the beginning of the seventh hour. He doesn't have to burn it anymore. If he doesn't have to burn it anymore, he can just get rid of it any way he wants. So what's this whole buffer created here to get the firewood? Just wait until the beginning of the seventh hour, and then you don't have to burn it anymore. You can get rid of it any way you want. So that's the way Rashi poses the question. Tosafot doesn't like Rashi's explanation for a number of reasons, one of which is, how could you wait till the seventh hour and then do Hashbata? Whoever heard of doing Hashbata in the seventh hour? You're already in the Zman HaYisur. So why are you doing Hashbata at that point in time? Right? Hashbata is to be done before the Zman HaYisur. So therefore, the Rabbeinu Tam explains over here that Shlosh HaBiro is after the sixth hour. After the sixth hour, because Rov HaOlam Ivarim B'Shesh K'tikun Chachamim. Most people burn their Chametz, like the Takanat Chamim, during the sixth hour. Aval b'shat b'ro, dainu sheish, kemen she'ein mitzvah l'varo l'midrabanan hashbatato b'chol davar. So that means when it's the shat b'ur. Shat b'ur means when most people in the world do b'ur chametz. That's in the sixth hour. During that period of time, then you can do it any way you want, because you're not at the point where there's an obligation midoraita to do hashbata. It's an imposition to Rabbanan. The Rabbanan said, get rid of it. So just get rid of it any way you want. Once you hit the point at the end of the sixth hour, you're facing an Isur Doraita. Over there, then there's a mitzvah Doraita to do Hashbata. And you have to do Sreifa at that point, because that's the mitzvah Min HaTorah. Now, what's interesting here is this is Rashi and Tosafot the Shittatam, which is what's driving what over here. According to Rashi, Hashbata is a response to Bayre Bayimatze. Because you have a problem of Isur Bayre Bayimatze, then before you're Mashbit the Chametz. So that's why Rashi believes you go into the seventh hour, you have Chametz. So now, Bayer Bayimatzei, no problem. What's the response to that? I do Hashbata, I get rid of it. So that's Hashbata, is that response to Bayer Bayimatzei. On the other hand, Tosafot views Hashbata as a way to prevent you from coming to the Isur of Bayer Bayimatzei. You do Hashbata in order not to get into trouble with Bayer Bayimatzei. It's not that Bayer Bayimatzei causes you to do Hashbata, but rather Hashbata is a preventive measure not to get to Bayer Bayimatzei. As we said earlier in the Masechta, this also explains the difference in their opinion as to how Bedika functions and how Bittul functions, because they view Hashbata and the interaction between Hashbata and Bayre Bayimatzei differently. So Elo Amar Rava, so Rava has to come up with a different explanation here. Gzeira Mishum Yom HaMi'unan. So Gzeira because of a cloudy day. On a cloudy day, we need a bigger buffer. Where it says, Yehoch Yafilu Ba'arba Sho Namilu Necho. You're talking about a cloudy day, Cloudy day, we're not talking about 5 and 7. You can't tell the difference between anything. Noon? Noon doesn't matter anymore. That threshold of noon is not meaningful anymore. So if you're going to back it up to give yourself a buffer back to the fifth hour, why don't you give the buffer all the way back to the fourth hour? When it comes to the fourth hour, everybody eats at the fourth hour. So now there are two ways you can explain that. Everybody eats at the fourth hour. Therefore, everybody knows when the fourth hour is. When your stomach starts to growl, that's the fourth hour. So you know when the fourth hour is. You're not going to make a mistake about the fourth hour. It's only in the fifth hour that's already when you make a mistake. That's one way to read it. The other possibility is that the Chachamim didn't want to impinge on people's normal eating habits. If you said that you can't eat during the fourth hour, that's when most people eat. They eat in the fourth hour. So to make a gazero, a buffer that bumps into the fourth hour, then you're impinging on the normal eating patterns of people, and that doesn't make sense. So that's what it means that dalad zman su dalad choli. So we don't go back to the fourth hour. We only start at the fifth hour, even on Yom HaMe'unan. Tanu Rabbanan. Now we have this explanation about the fourth hour. Sha Rishona Machal Ludim. When it comes to the first hour, it's the food or the people, the Ludim, eat at that point in time. Shnia. The second hour of the day, Machal Listim. That's the time period that the Listim, the marauders, eat. Shlishit, the third hour, is Machal Yoshim. That's the eating time for the people who are inheritors, meaning that they're second generation of wealth. Revi'it, Machal Poalim. The fourth hour is when normal working people eat. Chamishit, Machal Talmidei Chachamim. The fifth hour is when the Talmidei Chachamim eat. Shishit, Machal Kol Adam. And the sixth hour is when most people eat. Rav says, V'hamar Rav Papa, didn't Rav Papa just say before, Revi'it Zman Zvudala Koli? That the fourth hour is when most people eat. El ipuch. You have to switch around the bright and now. Revi eat machal kol adam. The fourth hour is when everybody eats. Chamishit. The fifth hour is machal poalim. That's when the workers eat. And shishit machal tamidei chachamim. The sixth hour is when the tamidei chachamim eat. Mikan veilech. From after the sixth hour onward, kizorek even lechemat. It's like throwing a stone into an empty flask, an empty barrel, which is destructive. It's loud, noisy, and it's destructive to the barrel. So that's the same thing. If you eat after the sixth hour, you've waited so long that the food is no longer going to have that beneficial impact on you because you waited so long to eat. Amar Abaye, lo amran el adotayim midei bitzafra. That's only true if the person didn't eat anything that morning. So if they wait until after the sixth hour and then they only start to eat, that's when the food has no beneficial impact on them. But had they had a little snack during the morning, adotayim midei bitzafra, if they had that little snack late on bud, then we don't worry about it. Then when they eat even after the sixth hour, it's okay. So you need to eat something or have something in your body at least in the first 6 hours of the day, in order to have the digestive system be ready to accept the food that comes in later. So now, let's just understand this. First of all, what we have to understand is that until the modern era, there was no such thing as 3 meals a day. People only ate 2 meals a day. The 2 meals a day were like a brunch-like, which was a breakfast, lunch, something around the 10 o'clock, the fourth hour of the day, and then dinner. Those were the only 2 meals that people had a day, and they only had 2 meals a day. So in most people, normal people, are having meals at the, let's call it the fourth or fifth hour around that general time period. That's the time they're going to eat because that's a meal that's going to cover you for the entire day. It's somewhere between the beginning of the day and giving you enough to continue through the day. And then dinner is at the end of the day. At the closure of the day, you also have another meal. So now this meal, when these people eat the meal, depends on their profession or depends on their status in terms of their economic status. So the first one of these ludim, are individuals who are awake all night. They are cannibals or whether they're killers, gladiators, people that are involved in crime. And then when it comes to the morning, they're ready to eat. I mean, it's the end of their day. It's the end of the day. They want to eat. The listim, on the other hand, yeah, they were up all night stealing in their thievery, but they decide they take a little nap before they eat. So they just nap for an hour and then they get up. They're a little hungry. They were tired from all their work overnight. Since they're tired from the work, they take a little nap and then they get up to eat. Ma'achal Yoshim is not because there's any reason they have to eat then, but they don't have to do, as Rashi says, any amel. They don't work for anything. So since they don't work for anything, they eat early. They don't have to get up to go to work. They don't have to go out to work. They have nothing to do, so they eat. So that's why they eat in the third hour. They don't have a sense of the difficulty in gaining the food, and then they have no reason not to eat earlier because they're not working. And then once you reach the fourth and the fifth hour, that's when you're into the normal meal times for people, whether it's the poalim, the workers, or when most people eat. That's the general time when most people eat. And then Maseid Tamidei Chachamim is at the end because the Tamidei Chachamim are busy learning, and so therefore they postpone their eating until the latest time possible where it's still be beneficial to them so they can learn before they get to their meal. All right, so now back in the Gemara, Amar Ravashi. Ravashi says, "Kemachloket beidut, kach machloket bechametz." The same machloket that Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir have by edut is also the same machloket that they have by chametz. Gemara says, Pshita, Hainu Hachtamrina. Isn't that what we've been discussing for the last two daf here? The last two daf, we're trying to reconcile and deal between the Mishnah and Sanhedrin and the Mishnah and Psachim. That's exactly what we've been dealing with. Of course, we think that their opinions are consistent between the two. Hakamashulan, Shinuye Deshanina and Shinuyehu. Rav Ashi is coming to tell us, no, the answers that we gave or the explanations that we gave are good explanations to reconcile between the Mishnayot. Velo Teima Tanayehi. And don't conclude that there's a Machloket Tanayim. Machloket Tanayim meaning about the opinions of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. One Tana says that the opinion of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda is such, that's in Sanhedrin, and one Tana thinks the opinion of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda is such is here in Psachim. And they actually don't agree. Don't say that. We are going to reconcile between them, and the reconciliations that we did until now are good reconciliations. So what is that? So Rashi says over here, what is the reconciliation that we're talking about here? So in the first case, Rashi says, well, the difference between Sanhedrin and here is because Chametz Masur the Chol Adam, that Chametz is given over to everybody. We have longer margins of error in Sanhedrin and shorter margins of error by Chametz. So because that's Masur the Chol, which is a strange way to phrase it because that sounds like a kula. Sounds like that we're giving less of a buffer because everybody's involved with it. So the answer, or the way to explain that, is that by Chametz, you're crossing over the noontime period. So crossing over the noontime period, as far as Chametz is concerned, should result in a position where you give no buffer whatsoever. You should be able to have an exact time or very close to exact time. How come by Chametz we're not doing that and we're giving actually a bigger buffer than that? The answer to that question is that Chametz is the Chol Masur Hu. And so therefore, even though Chametz technically shouldn't have such a big buffer, we're giving it an additional buffer because it's Masur LaKol. Because if we just took literally what we know from Sanhedrin, which is that noon is a line or demarcation that people can differentiate between, then we should have given them very little buffer, almost no buffer here by Chametz. The reason we give more is because it's Masur LaKol. That's one possibility of what it means to Shaninan. Inami Rashi says that how come in Sanhedrin we don't worry about people making a mistake between the fifth hour and the seventh hour around that time period? And here by Chametz we do worry about it and we're creating all these extra buffers. So Rashi's answer to that is that Chametz is Masur LaKol. The Chametz is given over to everyone and that's why they have that problem. Inami b'shum yom ha'mu'unan, because of a cloudy day. And so a cloudy day is meaningful by Chametz because if it happens, we need to give people a greater buffer so they don't make a mistake. Vaidut, we spoke about this yesterday. If it's a cloudy day, they may not be able to give testimony. They may not be able to determine the time. And so because of that, they may not be able to testify. Or if they do testify, they better have a way to be able to determine when that testimony is or why they're not having a problem because of that cloudy day. Amar Rav Shimi Bar Ba'ashi. Rav Shimi Ba'ashi's son says, Lo shanu b'sha'ot. People make these mistakes or these margins of error when it comes to hours. One of them says before sunrise. One of them says after sunrise. Then they do it for sure. We can't reconcile. One says pshito. Of course, that's been the assumption all the way along here. One of them says it was prior to sunrise. One of them said it was during sunrise. Their edut cannot be established, or we cannot reconcile between the two testimonies of these edim. Hainami pshita. That's also obvious. Nagmar says, no, ma'od detema. I might have thought tarvayu chad milta kamei. They're both saying the same time period. V'hadi ka'amar b'tocha netzach ama. What about the one who said it was during sunrise? So how is he going to reconcile with the one who said before sunrise? Bigluya havakai. He was standing open in an area that's an open area. V'zaharure ba'almahu dechaza. He's seeing the rays or the brilliance of the sun coming up, and he thinks that he's in the sunrise. It's really prior to sunrise, but because he's in an open area where he gets a clear view of the horizon, and then the rays of the sun are coming through, he thinks it's already sunrise. So truthfully, they both met before sunrise, but this person just wasn't able to clearly discern that that was sunrise. Kamash Malan, but we don't give that explanation. And that if you say in sunrise, you literally mean in sunrise, and that cannot be reconciled by someone who says before sunrise. Okay, we'll stop over here.